Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And as promised, we have a few chefs who are going to talk about their triumphs and their insecurities,
right.
Their hits and flops.
Mm-hmm.
And Cindy, so who's the first of the chefs today?
Chris Amendola is on the air with us. Hi, Chris. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on with you guys.
I'm excited to talk with you, and I'm so happy that you're here in town, and you have such a wonderful background as a chef. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now here in Baltimore, and what's kind of news for you.
Well, right now I just accepted a new position. I took the executive chef position at Waterfront Kitchen in Baltimore. We're in Fells Point.
That's great.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Happy for you.
It's a gorgeous place. They have an amazing location.
Good. Yeah. I'll come visit you soon.
Awesome.
So we're talking about sort of hits and misses in your experience as a chef on your menus over the years. What are some of the things that have been hits for you over time?
I'd say there's probably two that stand out the most. One was when I took my first chef de cuisine position in Great Barrington, Massachusetts at a little restaurant called Allium.
Mm-hmm.
I did this dish where kind of it was a play on bacon and eggs. I took pork belly, sous vide it, and then had a poached egg. And then with the pork belly, I did a kind of like a maple glaze on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the menu for a while. And one of the guests, you know, that I served it to, he had told me that it changed his life.
That's awesome.
So good.
that's the greatest thing a chef can hear, isn't it? When someone comes up and
it's so good.
Exactly. It's just so exciting.
Life changing is a quality endorsement.
Yeah, that's amazing. Good for you.
Yes.
That sounds great.
Breakfast for dinner is a fun thing to to toss out there in a new way for folks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's always one of my favorites. I love breakfast. I don't get to cook it too much because usually it's wake up. Hurry up and get to work, and then work all day and go home and go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have breakfast when I go home from work.
Yes,
it's so easy.
Do too.
Yeah, it's so easy to throw together an egg dish at the end of the night. There you go.
That is very true.
Yeah, why is it that just really good eggs and really good toast or something seems to be
so satisfying.
Somehow decadent, you know?
It's an amazing combination, especially when you have that yolk that's runny and can sop up the bread. Oh, man.
There you go. So
not much better than that.
I hope you didn't skip breakfast, Chris.
You're going to get hungry. So
what's that other big dish that surprised you with that was more successful or a big hit for you?
So when I first moved to Baltimore, I was the exec chef of Flea Street Kitchen, and we had our own farm. We raised our own pigs and stuff like that. And I had a surplus of pig heads. I was trying to figure out what to do with them. I already had porchetta di testa for the charcuterie and, you know, other random things here and there. So I decided to break the pig head down into, like, the snout, the jowl, the tongue, and serve all these individual cuts. And just for fun, I put it on the menu as pig face and pickles because I served it with house-made pickles.
That's awesome.
To my surprise, it sold more than anything else on the menu.
Oh, good for you.
Oh,
my gosh.
Blown away by the amount of people that ordered the pig face.
That's awesome. That's a good story. That's very cool.
So the call in the kitchen's got to be ordering 3 pig face.
And pickles.
All day, you have 7 pig face now.
That's great.
Where's that pig face on the fly?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, oh, gosh. All right, there we go. That's all the kitchen lingo for now.
Since I'm the negative guy.
All right, Tony's going with a negative.
So what are the dishes that, like, you had feelings wrapped up in it, you were committed to it, you believed in it, you thought about it, you're like, this is a soulful thing, people are going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get it. They didn't buy it. What were those dishes?
I would say probably the first one that I ever experienced, I was young. I was like 19 or 20, and this is when I was working in Orlando, Florida at a restaurant. It was my day off, and my buddy was coming in for dinner, and I was like, oh, I'll come in, you know, cook a couple courses for you, and I'll go home. And so this is when, like, the whole modern and molecular thing was going on, and it was real big, and I was real into it. And so I went in. I spent all day working on this dish. It was going to be a play on oysters Rockefeller. And so what I did, I took an oyster and I encapsulated it in a spinach puree. Mm-hmm. And then set it around the oyster and put hollandaise sauce on it. Mm-hmm. I was like so happy about it. I was like, sweet, you know, I got it done. Sent it out, you know, whatever. I had one left over and I ate it and it almost made me throw up.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
How did your pal like it?
I don't know. It was never mentioned.
That's a real good friend. That's a good friend. Yeah,
that's a
real
very
friend.
Good friend. Oh my gosh.
That was dinner. It was awesome.
It was awesome. God, I'm never going back there again. He should stay on his day off. No, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. Well, so and, ever since then, I always make sure I taste before I send it out.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's a good lesson. Mm. Well, and it's funny because you said when I was younger and when I was thinking about my own, you know, flops this morning, I was thinking, you know, they were. Some of them might have been not that long ago, but definitely they were in the beginning. You know, when you're just starting to cook, you think, I can do this. And then
I caught a couple of those along the way. Do you have a dish do you have something that's upcoming that you're dreaming about that's going to be the thing that you're convinced that's going to be a hit that you're terrified that might become a flop?
No.
Is there something in your mind?
Off the top of my head, not quite. I'm still trying to get my feet on the ground over there and, you know, get a team in place and menu set up. You know, so I'll probably just go with like staples of mine, mm-hmm. you know, until I get my feet under my on the ground over there.
Sure.
It's funny how though, like you wake up the one day and it's like you have this thing in your head, mm-hmm. and it's not okay until you get to actually see it
right.
or taste it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you wonder what they're gonna think, and you're a little too wrapped up in it, you know.
Yeah. Very true.
Well, thanks, Chris. Good to talk with you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
All right. Have a good day. Bye bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
And so that was a nice chat with Chris.
Yeah.
So the next chef that we have on is Michael Costa. Michael's a fellow that we've known a long time. He worked with us a while here in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And now he's the executive chef of Zaytinya in Washington, D.C. Michael, how are you today?
Hey, Michael.
Very well. Good to hear you guys.
Yeah, you too.
So maybe give people an idea of what you're doing now and some of the basics of what you're cooking and a little bit of your background.
Sure.
And then we'll get into all the feelings we need to talk about.
Yeah, I'm right now. I run Zaytinya, which is one of Jose Andres's restaurants. We serve Greek, Turkish, and Lebanese food. It's a small plate format, so a lot like what I used to do with you guys in Baltimore. As far as my background, I mean that's all pretty well documented. I went to the University of Virginia. Worked with Michelle Richard, and then in Paris at the restaurant Michelle Rassong, and then got to work with you guys for a few years, and now I actually still live in Baltimore and commute to D.C. every day.
So we've been talking a little bit about the fine line between hits and flops, because you always have your heart in the dish, and you've had your mind flipping the dish around in your head for a while, and then you go and you work on it, and then you go to send it out to people. Or you hope that they order it, or you hope you ordered it correctly, or you hope you explained it correctly to the servers, or you hope that it's going to come out the way that you always thought that it was going to come out.
The vision.
What are the things, and you can lead with whatever you want to, tell us about some of the hits that you had that maybe you didn't expect would be big hits, and things that kind of flopped that you really couldn't explain at the time, and maybe in retrospect you have an idea of why it might not have worked.
Yeah, I think the biggest that I've had at the menu here is a lamb tongue dish. We've been doing grilled lamb tongue for a couple of years, and I expected it to be the kind of thing we sell two or three of every day. But we're going through about 35 pounds of lamb tongues a week.
Wow.
To the point where the vendors are running out, which is kind of a shock. But if you think about it, lamb is basically a muscle like any other piece of meat, and
sure.
It's a good introduction to the world of offal. The prep we sell it on is got some celery, some spicy red chilies, some green Cherignola olives, raisins, things like that. So it's a little bit sweet, a little bit spicy, crunchy, you know, nice meaty texture of the lamb tongue. But that was definitely an unexpected surprise.
That's cool.
What I'm finding, the older I get, the people respond most to the things that are craveable. Like when, you know, we compose a dish, it's really easy to be clever, it's really easy to be interesting, but, you know, when we make the dish and we eat the whole plate, if we don't want to finish the plate and go back and eat another one, then that dish doesn't go on. And once we held that to be the standard, we found we had a lot fewer flops, you know, because the the craveability standard kind of gets, it's easy to get people behind that.
You can't eat smart.
Yeah, exactly.
You can be entertained by smart, but you can't eat it. And in the end, you want people to come in. You want people to come in and be like, man, I'm so happy we have lunch here today. We have dinner here today.
Yeah, absolutely. An unexpected flop was the time that I bought Santa Barbara spot prawns, which are one of the greatest products that comes out of any sea anywhere, and some of the sweetest, most succulent shrimp you could possibly imagine. I think it might have been the fried shells and fried head that did it, but
should be the best part,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I really couldn't get over why that one didn't sell. I mean, I only purchased to sell 20 orders, and we sold 10. I took the rest home. And,
oh my gosh!
Yeah,
chances are
they are delicious.
So was my wife. But,
wow.
chances are the listeners are all thinking fried shells and fried heads. These people are insane.
Yeah,
because they wouldn't have bought them either.
What was with it?
Very simple: Scordell Yaw, some preserved lemon. Pretty traditional accompaniments to fried seafood in Greece.
Okay.
And people just didn't want it.
Wow. Yeah, those shrimp are so good. That came from Huntsman?
Yeah. Javier's the man.
Yeah, Javier is the man.
So let's talk about the tartare.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a good trip, though, wasn't it?
Let's talk about
Michael?
The tartare.
Oh, my God. That was a great trip. Oh, boy. Go ahead. Tell your story.
Well, I guess you're talking about the Pazzo mustard ice cream. I think that was... I was definitely in a needing to impress folks phase back then, and I think that was definitely something that I did more of for attention grabbing and for, to kind of prove that I can cook and to prove that I'm clever. And I stand by it. It was a good dish. It was interesting, but I think about it now, and it's the kind of thing that you'd take a bite of and be like, oh wow, that's interesting, and then kind of push it away and let everyone else eat it. Not the kind of thing you're gonna just like house the whole plate and order another one, Mm-hmm. That one definitely would not have passed the craveability standard.
No, I agree with you. It was delicious. And the inspiration for the dish was also, you had it at Canaroca, right?
Yeah,
in Spain.
Still one of the best meals I've ever eaten.
Oh, me too. That was really amazing. That was an amazing experience. I'm glad we went when we went, too, when he was still a two-star.
Yeah, they were pushing for it. They were they were hungry back then.
Having eaten there sometime since then, that was far and away the best meal that I've had there.
I'm glad we had that experience.
It's funny. I like the dish and I like the idea. The whole question is, do you want more of the mustard ice cream?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the.
Yeah, you wouldn't order a bowl of it.
So, have you got any new dreams that you're going to chase that you're wondering if it's going to become a hit or a flop?
Well, I've been working on a few new desserts, and there's this one thing that I love, but I don't know if the market's going to be there for it. There's a traditional Persian carrot juice ice cream float that they do. It's basically like frothy carrot juice poured over saffron ice cream with a little bit of vanilla in it, and when you eat it, it tastes like a creamsicle.
Yes.
It's absolutely delicious.
I've had it.
Yeah, but it's a weird idea, isn't it? Like, it's the kind of thing that I'm going to put out there and we're just going to see, because I definitely love it and I definitely want to. Like, I'm thinking about eating one right now.
But I guess so. It's a pretty humid summer.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. You can use that kind of help.
But, it's the time to do it.
Yeah, right. We'll see.
Well, good luck.
All we can do is try.
That's great.
I wonder if you just need some kind of a clever marketing name, Costa.
Yeah, I mean, the traditional Persian name isn't that easy for Americans to pronounce. I can't even pronounce it, so I'm not going to try. Sometimes I think when we give something that has a name that people have trouble pronouncing, a simple English name, they're likelier to order it because no one wants to feel stupid trying to pronounce a word in a language they don't speak.
Right, of course.
Yeah, I think that's why there's still numbers so many of those Chinese menus.
Yeah.
Well, there's a pretty big Persian population in D.C., so maybe you will... I have some people that can pronounce the name of it coming in. That would be nice.
Yeah,
I'm sure they would be very excited.
People on our staff that speak Farsi, so
that's great.
Fun. DC's really interestingly diverse like that. There's people from everywhere in our dining room. I mean, it's amazing how many different people come. I mean, everything from like business people from Tokyo to people that live in the neighborhood, people that work for the government, people going to see Taylor Swift at the Verizon Center. Everybody comes.
That's great, Michael.
Very cool. A little lamb tongue and then a nice Taylor Swift show sounds like a pretty spectacular evening.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the program, Michael.
Yeah, good my day. Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Nice to speak with you.
Yes, absolutely. Have a good day.
You too.
When we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we have an interview with Duff Goldman, pretty well-known pastry chef and a bit of a TV star. And who got his start once upon a time in Cindy's Kitchen.
Can't wait to talk to Duff.
All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food & Wine. We'll be right back.